Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Sorry for the late start, but our topic for today is goals versus miracles. And the numbers to call to get coaching on creating the impossible and thriving in your life, 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Outside of North America, you can dial 001-760-918-4300, and that will get you online with me. So, a little bit of a miracle that I'm talking to you at all, given the way our last couple shows have gone. But let me sort of talk about where today's topic came from and why it matters, like why this distinction of goal versus miracle is relevant. And in order to do that, I'm gonna take it from my new book, Creating the Impossible. And this is day two of the 90-day program, which is the second half of the book. And by the way, I'm going to be giving out copies of the book to callers today. So if you get in and get on, again, numbers to call are 866-254-1579, toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, 001-760-918-4300 outside of that little part of the world. And I'll be sharing copies of the book. But here's what day two says. It starts with a quote from Albert Einstein. There are two ways to live. You can live as if nothing is a miracle. You can live as if everything is a miracle. One of the reasons I encourage people, I'm reading from the book now, one of the reasons I encourage people to take on impossible projects is that generally speaking, so much more is possible in life than we can imagine with our limited perception. But we're obsessed with being realistic. As one of my students said when I challenged them to actually make their impossible project about what they really, really wanted, that would take a miracle. But what if miracles aren't as uncommon as we think? Not religious miracles, but the kind of coincidences, synchronicities, and happy accidents that always seem to be a part of any story of extraordinary success. Here's the rule of thumb. How miraculous something appears is inversely proportional to how much we think we're at cause in its creation. For example, if I write my name on a piece of paper, I'm very unlikely to think of that as a miracle. But if my name appears on the paper seemingly all by itself, that will seem to me to be fairly miraculous. In other words, we tend to attribute anything that comes from a force beyond our own direct action as being in some sense miraculous. And this is where the distinction between goals and miracles unveils itself. If I think it's up to me whether something happens or not, I set it as a goal. If I think it's up to the universe, I pray or hope for a miracle. So here's a few simple examples. If Facebook wants to add another $1 billion to its bottom line, they'll set that as a goal or a business objective. If I want to add $1 billion to my bottom line, I'll pray for a miracle. If I want to have an amazing relationship with my kids, I focus on it as a goal for the year ahead. If someone who's deeply estranged from their family wants such a relationship, they hope for a miracle. If a doctor wants to cure a patient's life-threatening illness, they put all their energy, attention, and resources into it. In other words, treat it as a goal. If a patient's family wants the same result, they may well find themselves praying for a miracle. So how does that map out for you? Well, the question is, what would you like to have happen? So here's an exercise if you want to play along at home. Right? Make a list of your top three goals. And it can be your top three goals for your life. It can be your top three goals for your business. It can be your top three goals for the year ahead. Now, I want you to make another list. And I want this other list to be a list of your top three miracles. What are three things you'd most like to have happen, even though you have no idea how they would come about or even if they could come about? And then the invitation in the book, and this is also my invitation to you, is when you look at your miracle list, what might be fun to engage with as an impossible project anyways, even though or maybe even because you have no idea how it could happen? Because one of the sort of golden rules of creating is that it's easier to create what you actually want than what you think you can have. So just because you can see how something could happen doesn't mean it's going to be easy to create. In a funny way, if something really lights you up, if something is an authentic, heartfelt desire, then that brings a different energy forward in us. It brings forth more aliveness. It brings forth more of this creative potential within us. And that actually makes it easier to create. It's almost like if your car automatically got a bigger engine for hills, you'd actually find it easier to go up steep hills than you would to be on the flat because you've got a bigger engine. Well, we're kind of like that. When we're involved, when we involve ourselves, when we open ourselves up to the miraculous, we have a bigger engine with which to pursue it. That engine of inspiration, that engine of availability, that engine of possibility. So it's actually kind of extraordinary what you can accomplish if you knowing how you're going to accomplish it isn't part of the equation. So I'm going to go to calls soon. When I start going to calls, anyone who calls in and gets on today is going to get a free copy of Creating the Impossible, a 90-day program to get your dreams out of your head and into the world. And the numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. Outside the U.S. and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. And we're going to begin in Washington, D.C. with Sarah. Sarah, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, great. All right. So what I wanted to talk to you about is that I suddenly have, this new opportunity where I have more free time. My husband and I have been really busy with young children. They're now 3 and 4. And so I have more free time. We were able to get an au pair to come. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, now I have like time I can schedule to follow things that are my dreams, but I'm feeling kind of like guilty, and I don't know if there's a bit of unworthiness there, and I'm just like, I don't, how do I deal with that?
So I'm not quite clear when you say you feel guilty. Do you feel guilty because you've got time and you're not doing what you think you should be doing with it?
Okay, I feel guilty that if I, let's say I want to go back to school and, do something else, like I won't be there to put my daughters to bed, the au pair will. And I feel guilty that, I might miss out on some things with my kids than I would normally do. That's the part that I feel guilty about.
So what's your relationship with guilt? And what I mean by that is, look, some people, they feel guilty about something, but it really doesn't matter. Like they go, yeah, I feel a bit guilty about that anyways, and they're able to carry on. Some people get racked with guilt to the point where it's all they can think about, and most people are somewhere between the two. Like, what's your relationship with guilt? How big a deal is guilt in your world?
It tears at my heart.
Tears out my heart. That's a pretty big deal. Okay, that gives me a sense of where we're doing. Now, what if that feeling wasn't telling you that you should beat the crap out of yourself and rip your heart out and stomp on it? It was suggesting to you that you might want something to be part of your life. Like when I heard you say that, here's exactly what I heard in my head. I heard you say, I want to be able to do something, and one of the things I'm thinking about is maybe going back to school, but I want to do it in a way that still lets me put my daughter to bed at night.
Right, right.
Now, to me, that's a really straightforward project. Like, I don't know how simple it is, but it's straightforward. Whereas
right.
The whole guilt thing is a big distraction. Like, who cares? Like, today you feel guilty, tomorrow you'll feel excited, the next day you'll feel guilty again, right? We all, we feel what we think. So whatever we happen to be thinking about in the moment is what we're going to be feeling in the moment. But right. if you take that feeling as guidance, not guidance that you're a worthless piece of crap, but guidance that, oh, this matters to me. Let me see what I can do about it.
Right.
If that were the question, not how do I handle the guilt, but how do I go back to school in a way that lets me get what I want to get out of school, but still be home at night to put my daughter to bed? I bet you anything, that's a very soluble problem.
Yeah. But what if it's not? I currently have a career. I'm a statistician, so I mean, I have a master's degree in what we do, but I feel like it's not what I'm supposed to be doing. It's sucking the life out of my soul. Sitting in front of a computer.
You're in rough shape, man. Your heart's being ripped out of your body. The life's being ripped out of your soul. I do not want to be you today.
My emotions are pretty
intense. So let me ask you a different question then. What's your sense of what you'd love to be doing, what you're here to do?
I'd like to go back to school for a master's in marriage and family therapy and maybe continue for a PhD, but that's a big commitment, and that's time away from my kids, and I still have, you know, but I want to be more of service. I want to make a tangible difference in people's lives.
So how, and I don't mean this in a bad way, it's just I don't have other words for it right now. How attached are you to the way that you make a difference and are of service is through getting this other master's?
Yeah, I could probably be of service. I don't have to do the other master's degree.
Here's one of the things that I see people do to themselves all the time is they try to get married before they've even gone on the first date. So it's like, no, okay, how am I going to go back to school? Well, I don't know. You might want to flirt with school a little bit. You might want to see if there's a class that kind of, you know, is worth taking and see if when you actually started going down that route, is it more attractive to you or less attractive to you? Are you more drawn to it or less? And that wouldn't have to interfere with anything. You might want to play with having an intention around being more of service and see what opportunities to serve start showing up in your world. Because my
right.
experience is, as soon as you have that intention, the opportunities show up.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. over time, when we talk again in 3 months, when you call the show back, get what I did there? When you
yeah.
call the show back in 3 months to check in, you may tell me, do you know what? It all worked out, and I found a way of doing the school thing that fits in perfectly with my family, and I'm really excited about it. Or you might go, you know, I don't know what I was thinking with the school thing. That looks crazy to me now, but I'm doing this other super cool thing in my time that opened up and having a great time with my daughter, getting to know her and getting to be a part of her life. Or it might be something that neither you nor I can even imagine right now.
Yeah, I can
like,
see that.
How would that be?
I can see the importance of putting the intention out there that what, you know, my soul is asking me is, you know, that I want more meaning. I want to be of service. I want, and I'm just putting that out there of how I can do that with where I'm at right now.
Yeah. And it's almost like when you focus on the guilt or the emptiness or the drain or the, you know, all the horrible feelings, it's like getting mad at the thermostat for telling you the temperature.
Right.
Right. That's just letting you know where your thoughts are going. And it's useful to know your thoughts are going there because you can consider them and you can go, you know what, actually this does matter to me. I really do want to be a part of my kid's life. For myself, when Oliver was born, actually it was before he was born, when he was in his mummy's tummy. So I knew he was coming. I didn't know he was coming, but I knew somebody was coming. I did an exercise that I called the happy deathbed. And I imagined myself on my deathbed, but I was really, really happy. And when I checked in with myself, like, what are you so happy about? Like, what are you so glad about the way you've lived your life? The big thing that came to me was I'm really glad I was a part of my kids' lives as they were growing up. Now, I didn't know that. I was very career-driven. I was very success-oriented. But that really affected me because I really saw that mattered to me. And I did a lot of things differently over the next 20 years because of it. I took a slower path, a less direct path towards success. But I kind of always knew 20 years down the line, I'd be in the same place, successful with a great family, as I would have been if I'd gone the success route first. I didn't really think it was an either or, but if it had been, I knew where my bread was buttered. I knew which way I wanted to go. And it just sounds to me like that same opportunity is there for you, that feeling of guilt just letting you know, oh, wow, I think this actually matters to me, and I don't want to sacrifice it. And then I go, okay, so how do I do what I want to do without sacrificing it? Very straightforward question. And while I can't tell you the answer, I promise you, if that's your question, answers to that question will appear.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah.
Very cool, Sarah. Stay on the line, and we're going to get you out a copy of Creating the Impossible.
Thank you so much.
A pleasure. You know, that was such a great example of how we misunderstand our feelings, and so we miss the guidance that they have in them. We miss the sort of simple sense of direction they're giving us. We get caught up in, when we feel that way, oh, I'm wrong, I'm bad, I'm horrible, instead of, oh, this feeling is guiding me in a direction. It's letting me know my thinking's on track or off track. I'm a little bit nutty right now about this, or I'm seeing really clearly. And it's really useful to be able to do that. Let's go from Washington, D.C. to Washington State and talk to Lori. Lori, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, I have you on speaker. One moment.
Speaker is annoying. Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, thank you. Bear with me. I have a tendency to wander, and I want to keep it on task. So this is practice. I am learning the difference between goals and miracles, and I have had both occur in my life. And I wanted to get your opinion or what you have to say to me concerning that. I've always wanted to talk to Michael.
Into a question form.
I don't know if I can. Other than something silly like, why does it happen that I'm able to do this?
So why does it happen that you're able to...
How can I communicate to others how I have been able to set goals and have them happen? And then be willing for something to happen, and it happens miraculously.
So why do you want to be able to explain that to
them? Oh, question. Good question. Because that is one of my goals, is to be able to communicate how this has happened for me to others so that they possibly can learn how I did it.
So what if how you did it is nothing to do with how they'll do it? In other words, is the goal really to share how you did it, or is the goal to help other people do it for themselves?
The goal is to be able to help other people do it with how I did it as an example. And part of my example is I did it in a way, I'm stating statements that may be not true yet, But
well, so bear with me because I'm not
okay. Bear with me too because
I'm not. I'm going to ask the question again.
Okay.
But there is a reason that I'm asking it the way I'm asking.
I'm sure there is.
If it turned out that the best way to help people live more miraculous lives
mm-hmm.
was to never share your story of how you did it, would that be okay?
That would be okay.
Okay. So if that's true,
okay.
And I'm not going to hold you to that, but if that's
okay.
true, then it would seem to me that the more useful question to sit with
mm-hmm.
is, how do I help people live more miraculous lives?
Yes.
And I promise you, you will get different answers to that question than how do I share my story with people? Now, one of the answers you may get is share your story with people, right? I'm not suggesting that act is a bad idea.
I, you know, Mike, I get you. I really get you. I understand where you're going. And that is a really valid question. It may not be how I want to share my story. It might be living an example.
It might be less to do with you than you think.
Oh,
and
okay.
The reason that I'm suggesting...
I want it to be about me, man. And I say that sarcastically.
But this is the thing. Self-consciousness
mm-hmm.
is the enemy of creativity.
Oh, wow.
So the more we have our goals and projects be about us, the
mm-hmm.
the harder it is. Doesn't mean it's impossible. It
right.
just makes it harder structurally because our attention is inward instead of outward.
Will you please repeat that?
Yeah. When it concerns all acts of initiative and creation,
mm-hmm.
self-consciousness and self-obsession are the enemy of productivity and success. So when the focus is on how do I share me, mine, how do I live such that, how do I?
Right. Okay,
it's inherently, I can take any human being and make them less effective by getting them to think about themselves.
Thank you.
Any human being and make them inherently more effective by getting their attention off themselves and onto the person they want to help or impact.
Yes.
And while you're
reminding of that, Mike.
Well, and while your attention is on another, it may occur to you to share something about you, and you will. And no problem.
Right.
But it will it will come out of your connection with the other, not out of your desire to express yourself.
You know, it's one of those things that deep down I know that, but doing it, that's one thing I need to learn, and that's a good goal, is to not make it about me sharing. It's to make it about them.
I know that. I think the
okay.
simplicity of that, if you're willing to just let that be the intention, let that be plan A.
That's a big
all
plan
sorts
A.
of things will start to occur that will change the game from the way it looks to you now.
Now, at the beginning of the show, you were talking about goals and miracles. That would that be a goal or a miracle?
It honestly is a goal or a miracle to the extent that you think it's on you.
Right.
The more you on you, the more it's a goal, the more you get, hey, this is what I want, I don't know how it's going to happen, the more miraculous you'll experience it to be. It doesn't really
okay.
matter.
The
truth is, if you have a sincere desire, again, this is kind of like where we started with our other caller, if you have a sincere desire to serve people in this way, you'll
mm-hmm.
find opportunities and ways to serve them, guaranteed.
Okay. All right. I get that. I've been
and,
there.
And,
I am there. But
you know,
it's the whole not making
phone
it
back
about
when you've
me.
Messed with it for a while.
I'm sorry, one more time?
When you've messed with it for a while, when you've mucked about with it, when you've played with it, when you've tried it out and failed and then tried it out and it worked and then tried it out and it failed and then tried it out and it worked, phone back and let's talk about it again.
All right.
Talk about it from an experience of it instead of trying to think about what it might be like.
Telling you what has happened between now and that time? Processing?
Well, it's funny, you know, Lori, when I listen to you, it sounds hard the way you talk about it. Like, literally, all I'm saying is sit down with another human being, listen to them, and as you're listening, notice if anything occurs to you to say or do or share that might be helpful to them. And if it does, do, and if it doesn't, don't.
Right. I think for me, if it doesn't, don't. You know, looking at my life up to, you know, how I react to other people is I am over willing to share in some senses where they might not be ready to hear it. And I'm not talking about prophesizing.
Long enough to actually get to know someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to know them, when you have a real sense of them, notice whether or not it still occurs to you to share, and sometimes it will. Sometimes what it occurs to you to share will be different, but sometimes it will occur to you not to share. So your job is just to get to know people over the next few weeks.
You are reaffirming something that I had thought of. Reaffirming something that I have thought of, and that in itself is wonderful. Thank you.
Perfect, Lori. I'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right.
So, you know, that it's difficult because we get very caught up in thinking we know the way. And it's a very normal thing. It's not weird that we think, this is the path. But we mistake the path for where we want to get to. We mistake our plan for what it is that we're planning for. And if you get attached to the plan, if you get attached to the path, you tend to lose sight of the goal. You tend to lose sight of what it is that you want to create. Let's go to Long Beach, California, and let's speak to Siddhartha. Hey, Siddhartha.
Hi, Michael. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Are you Siddhartha or Sid, or what do you like to be called?
I would like to be called Siddhartha. I think you pronounced my name really nicely.
There you go. Okay, I shall continue to pronounce your name as
enlightenment,
okay.
Like the Buddha.
I know. That's why I liked it. So what are we going to talk about today? What's on your mind?
So, Michael, I'm actually calling because, I want some advice from you about relationships and goals related to that in the coming year. So I'm actually struggling to come out of a very hard breakup with my girlfriend, which happened at the end of last year, 2017. And I had done some goals for the coming year. And now what is happening is that I am unable to focus because I have a lot of anxiety and fear. And almost depression to a certain extent because of the uncertainty that I feel in the coming year, 2018. And, my focus on my goals has gone down. I'm unable to concentrate on anything because I think after the last call, you spoke about the path and the destiny. And the decision that I've made to myself is to kind of, I want her back in my life, and my focus has completely moved from my personal goals to the goals which focus on getting her back. And I'm just struggling between these two states on a daily basis, unable to concentrate on my work, on my career, what I do on a day-to-day level. So that's the reason I'm calling you today.
Let me ask a couple questions, Siddhartha, if it's okay. One is, heart of hearts, and I'm asking you to be honest without obligating you to be accurate. In other words, your perception may be skewed. So I'm not so much worried about you being right. I'm just asking you to look for what feels truest to you. Do you want her back because you love the relationship you have with her and the potential you see for that relationship? Or do you want to get back to that feeling of love and well-being that you had when you were with her?
You know, that's a great question. I think my honest answer is that I value the relationship because I feel I have personally grown so much being with her. I've learned so much, and I value that bond. So I definitely love her very much, and that is the reason, you know, I want her back.
So I have a thing that I sometimes talk about with clients that I call the second half of the goal. And the second half of the goal is the thing that nobody says out loud, and they might not even know that they're thinking it, but it's kind of the context within which they want the goal. So sometimes somebody's second half of the goal, if their goal was to get back into relationship with my partner, the second half of that goal might be, because otherwise I'm never going to feel whole and complete again. Because otherwise I'm never going to feel love that deeply again. Because, and forgive me for this because I don't mean to be disrespectful, but because I'm really horny, right? There could be a number of reasons the second half of the goal. Now, the second half of the goal that I always kind of recommend people try on is as a part of my wonderful life. So what does it feel like? How does it feel different to you if the goal is I'd love to get her back into my life as a part of my wonderful life? I'd love to get back into relationship with her as a part of my wonderful life. How is that different?
You know, honestly, I mean, as you're speaking through this, for me, at this point, I'm so much focused about getting her back in my life. And maybe practically speaking, I've never, thought about, the second half of the goal, really, honestly.
Most people haven't. But the reason I ask is there is no goal that works better when we allow it to become an obsession at the cost of everything else. Right? When we basically say, I am willing to let the rest of my life fall to hell until I get this. And the reason that that doesn't work is because even if we get what we thought we wanted, it doesn't give us what we thought it would give us. Because no form can, no person can, no circumstance can give you that sense of wholeness and fulfillment and completion that just being alive and present to that aliveness gives us. Now, that doesn't mean that as part of your living with presence and aliveness, you might not do things to see if you can create a new relationship with her that's, as good or better than the one you had. But it would be as a part of what you're doing. It wouldn't be instead of.
Mm.
I mean, the way you describe her, and again, I don't mean, and I ask forgiveness up front, even if what I say doesn't wind up being offensive, just in case, right? But in a way, you're talking about her like lunch. you know, I've got a bunch of stuff to do, but I can't even think about it until I've had lunch. Well, that kind of elevates lunch a little bit too high on the hierarchy. Actually, you can get on and do all the things you want to do in your life. And as part of that, you know, you can look to relationship. You can look to what might be possible. You can send invitations. You can see what occurs to you. You can start again. So it's neither about giving up on it, nor is it about obsessing more about it. It's just letting it take its place as part of the game, instead of allowing it to take over the game. Does any of this make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The last thing that you just said, you know, made me smile. You know, I'm sitting here and because I've been trying to figure out how do I move my focus from, you know, just one particular goal, like what you just said, to all the other goals that I've already made in life. And that has been really, really the challenge for me starting the new year. So it totally makes sense.
So why not let that be the game going forward, right? At least for the next week, at least as an experiment. Let this be part of the game, not the game, and see what happens. You know, I notice I've been using that phrase a lot today, but it's because ultimately that's how things get created. You show up, you move in a direction, and you see what happens. And based on what happens, you move further in that direction or you change directions. Right? That's all that ever really goes on. And so how about that for a plan for the week?
No, that's awesome. Michael, I'm going to ask you one thing, and because it is related to, you know, every day I wake up, I feel this uncertainty about this goal, right? I feel the anxiety because I feel the fear. I don't know if she's going to be ready to come back into this relationship. How or what would be a good way to get rid of that particular feeling?
Would you enjoy playing Monopoly if you knew you were going to win every time you played? Like it was guaranteed, preordained, you were going to win before you even started out.
Right.
Would you? Do you think that would be as much fun?
No, absolutely not.
So I think, to my mind, the fact that you don't know whether or not you're going to win this game, whether or not she's going to come back, is what makes it a game. Right? It sounds funny because we think, no, how do I make sure it happens? But look, if you really want to make sure it happens, there's a town near here called Stepford, and there's a guy there who used to work for Disney and make animatronic women. And you can get him to replace her with a complete animatronic double that will look exactly like her, sound exactly like her, but do whatever you program her to do. Do you want that? See, I'm hoping like hell that you don't.
No, definitely not.
Right. So then don't worry about it. She'll come back or she won't, and you can really enjoy the game along the way. All right, my friend. Stay on the line. We're going to get you out a copy of Creating the Impossible.
Thank you so much, Michael. I'm so excited. Thank you.
Pleasure, Siddhartha. You know, I kind of love that. Let me talk a little bit about about the book, because we were supposed to do a show on this last week, but we've been having all sorts of troubles. That's why I was a little late getting on today. And I do want to share so Creating the Impossible is a program I began running in 2009, and I began running it because I noticed over the years that the people played small even when they thought they were playing big. They felt like they were playing big because they were playing a little bit bigger than their life as it was. And me too. One of my coaches pointed it out to me. He said, you've created a masterpiece of a life on a postage stamp of possibility. And it really opened me up to a larger world of possibility. And so I created Creating the Impossible as a way to help people play games that they were probably going to lose. So it took the pressure off. Like sometimes, oddly, we put all this pressure on when we think, if I just try hard enough, if I just get everything right, I can win. Well, part of a miracle is it's not really up to you. It's not up to you, but it's not up to you. So if you play a game that you're probably going to lose if all you've got is your own efforts, you play it differently. And it turned out that when people got their head around the concept, which sometimes was the bit that took the longest, they really not only created cool stuff, but they had so much more fun in the process of creation. And so I've run it ever since 2009. I've evolved it. And finally, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I sat down with Hay House and we decided, let's put it into a book. And that book is now out. So if you want to learn more about the book, if you want to read what some really cool people like Ayanla Van Zant have said about the book, go to michaelneal.org/CTI book. CTI isn't Creating the Impossible. If you want to do the program with me, I'm taking a big group through the program later this month and all the way through April because it's a 90-day program. And you can learn more about that at michaelneal.org/CTI. Let's go back to the phones and let's go back to Washington, but let's speak this time to Elizabeth. Elizabeth, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, hello.
Hello.
You know, the question I have is why would you ever set goals if just letting it go or surrendering or just allowing the miracle to happen, like you said, seems to work better? But I'm almost afraid. To either to set the goal, because then I think I'm planning and trying to make things happen, or that surrendering or, I guess, visualizing and getting that feeling in your body or praying or whatever that is, that doesn't seem to work out either. It just doesn't seem to. And so I feel like on one side, I don't want to rely on being, you know, just thinking. But on the other side, I'm afraid to believe in a higher power, quite frankly.
Well, so I think it's actually a great question. And it's one of the imbalances that I attempt to address within Creating the Impossible, both the book and the program. And it's this idea that it's an either or. That either it's all up to me or none of it is up to me. The truth is, it's not up to you, but it's not up to you. Right? Now, the reason I make a distinction between goals and miracles isn't because I really think there are two different things. It's because when something happens and I feel like it was on me, I call it a goal. And when something happens and I don't feel like it was me, I call it a miracle. But really, those are just descriptions of my experience of what or who is at cause in something coming about in the world. So if we simplify it, let's take it out of the realm of goals and plan a trip to San Francisco. Okay? Mm-hmm. So for you to get to San Francisco, you have to go south. For me to get to San Francisco, I have to go north, right?
Right.
Well, chances are, we're both pretty confident that if we decide to go to San Francisco, we'll get there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we might fly, we might drive, we might get a ride, we might take a bus, we might take a train. Like, there's a lot of different ways we can get there, but we're both pretty sure we could get there. Now, that doesn't make it a goal or a miracle. It just gets us to San Francisco, right? And we probably both would think of that as a goal. Now, let's say that we want to go to Nepal, that we want to meet for coffee in Nepal next week.
Mm-hmm.
Now, logistically, the same things are involved. We got to free up our schedule, we got to make travel plans, and we got to get there. But chances are, it would seem more miraculous to both of us to meet up for coffee in Nepal than in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
The exact same process was there. Just one of them in our imagination seems less likely. So it isn't really why set goals if there are miracles, or why wait for miracles if you can set goals. It's why worry about how you're going to get there if there's somewhere you want to get. Why let that be a factor? Why let how likely it seems to us when we think about it be a critical factor in whether or not we head out?
So it sounds like the worrying or the whatever that energy is about my overall, I guess I'll call it a perception or a belief about how possible something is the magical. I mean, is that where the magic happens? In that, if I come to a place where I'm neutral or not judging one to be harder than the other. Instead, I just, in a sense, give it equal weight, whatever it is.
I like the way you're asking it, but I'm going to give you a different answer.
Okay.
The magic happens in the game. The magic never happens on the sidelines. The magic never happens when you're thinking about whether or not to do it. The magic can only happen when you're in the game.
So you just go for it. You just have to go for it and not overthink it.
Only because overthinking it leaves you at the mercy of what you can think of.
Right. Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. And if you can't think of a way, well, what's the point? Well, the point is, once you're in the game, different things will occur to you than occur to you when you're thinking about being in the game. And that is 100% reliable, even though it's 98% unpredictable what exactly will occur to you along the way.
So it feels like just jump, basically jump with the bungee cord, you know, ride, and just go and jump. Otherwise you're not going to jump and you're not going to have the experience.
Well, and I would say, you know, I kind of like the metaphor with the bungee cord, except for that it then jerks you back. So I would
okay.
be more inclined to going jump, knowing that there's a net.
Yeah.
And the hardest part. Is the very first step.
Right.
Because
right.
once
and
you're in the
air,
you're in the air.
But I feel like the net, maybe that's the faith part or the miracle part, that I'm afraid the net won't be there. Or the net.
Well, see, here's the net. And here's
like
the net. And I'm gonna have to do a very quick version of the net because of time.
Okay.
But the net is recognizing that you're intrinsically okay with or without whatever it is you want to create.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So you started out okay. You'll finish up okay. That's the net.
Got it. Yeah, unless brain starts to think about how you're not okay because the net wasn't
right,
there.
But then all that is, in other words, it's like the worst thing that can happen to you is the feeling of a thought about the worst thing that can happen to you.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Very helpful.
Pleasure. Stay on the line. We're going to get you out a copy of the book.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right. Take care. So we are coming to the end of time. So let me give you the links again. Sorry to those of you I didn't get to today. We'll kind of keep this going this month if I can get on air again. Sorry to keep harping on. It's an equipment failure. But check out michaelneal.org/CTI book. As a place to learn more about the book. Check out michaelneal.org/CTI as a place to learn more about the program. And if you want to get involved in creating even before you get the book, then go to Facebook, and there's a Facebook group called A Year of Creating the Impossible, #DailyCreation. And on that group, everyone in that group each day is simply creating something every day and sharing it. And the energy of that community is really exciting, really fun, really creative. And at the moment, I'm doing daily Facebook Lives on that community, sharing ideas. And even after the other group starts, I'll carry on there with it at least monthly Facebook Lives. So check it out. I hope you've enjoyed today's show. And until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.
I'm Jan Levenzant.